This is a download of Farming Today from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to www.bbc.co.uk. The presenter today, Charlotte Smith.
Good morning. Today, might more people going vegan offer opportunities for British farmers? We'll talk pulses later. But first, and not for the first time, we start with the weather. It's been a bit cold. Now, that's led English winemakers to light fires in their vineyards to ward off the frost. Simon Roberts from the Ridgeview Wine Estate uses bougies. That's a series of large candles to protect the buds on the vines from the cold. I asked if it might be easier just to cover them up.
Well, if you can imagine, we've got, in our vineyard alone, we've got 10 acres. So it would be quite difficult. We'd have to take that, put that over the vines and then take them off each row every day, obviously because we need to spray the plants and things like this. So shrouding them wouldn't really be practical.
What effect, then, does having these large candles have? Does it simply warm the air?
That's exactly what it does. So basically the configuration we have is every five plants, every other row, we have a candle, and this will protect us to about minus four.
What happens if it doesn't work, if the buds get frosted?
Basically, obviously the frost would burn the buds and then would set us back. So we're now a month into the season. So we would have the secondary buds would come, but they would be a month late. They would be less fruitful. So harvest would obviously then be a month later.
Is this, do you think, a gentle hint that the UK might not be the best place to
have a vineyard? I don't think so. I mean, the bougies we have are produced in France. They're used in many regions in Europe. So, I mean, there's been severe frosts in Alsace, Champagne, Burgundy. I think I read today there's a frost alert for Burgundy in Bordeaux this afternoon.
Presumably all this comes at a cost. How much does it cost you staying frost-free?
That is probably the biggest question of why you use bougies or not to use them. Each candle, they're expensive. They're about between 5 and 7 euros each. So we have 600 at a time. So just the cost of the candles is expensive. Then you've got people that are up all night monitoring the temperature and then lighting the candles. So from a cost point of view, it's extremely expensive. But with all the different types of frost you can get, the bougies are the one thing that will protect them against nearly every type of frost.
Simon Roberts there from Ridgeview Wine. Now, alongside vines, fields of blue and white flowers could appear across the British countryside if a trial starting this year is successful. 22 organic farms in the south and west of England are planting field lupins. The idea is to find out whether it's possible to grow them for livestock feed. Now, at the moment, it can be difficult for feed manufacturers to source protein ingredients for organic livestock. They have to import organic soya or sunflower meal from China, Russia and the Ukraine. Although, as we heard earlier this week, farmers in the UK are now beginning to experiment with growing soya. Well, the Innovative Farmers Network thinks that UK-grown organic lupin seeds could also be an alternative. Sarah Swadling has been to one of the farms taking part in their field lab trial near Wiveliscombe in Somerset. She met the project's coordinator, Nigel Mapstone, from Mole Valley Farmers.
These are white lupins, which are the largest seed. They're a bit like a small bean. That's white and slightly flat. So they will produce a lupin with a white flower. We also have the blue lupin, which is a smaller pea-like seed. Blue lupins are about 35% protein, and white lupins can be even higher. It's similar to beans and peas, but it's that much higher in protein.
I guess many gardeners are familiar with the brightly coloured, tall flowers of the lupin that you get in your back garden. But what do field lupins look like?
You get the sprays of flowers, either blue or white, and they look very similar to the ones that are grown in the gardens, but they are a different strain of lupin.
They look very much like peas and beans. So will they fix nitrogen out of the atmosphere into the soil, like
yes.
Peas and beans?
Yes, they are a legume, so for the organic farmer, it's putting nitrogen into his soil. There's a gain to the farmer apart from the value of the seed that he's producing.
Why haven't lupins been a crop traditionally in the UK then?
In a conventional system, there isn't really the same demand because conventional farmers can use soya and rape quite easily. When you're looking at growing it as a crop to sell, one of the reasons that lupins haven't been grown like that in this country is because you have to have the quantity and the tonnage. Nobody is going to buy lupins for a mill unless they've got enough to make it a consistent part of the feed throughout the whole winter.
So the feed manufacturers are after that critical mass.
You've got to get a critical mass, and that's never been achieved. But if we can bring farmers together to grow that initial critical mass, then it should take off. And the question for organic farmers is, if we can grow them in a way which will give a consistent yield, our target is to get probably about a ton to the acre, but we may not even get half of that.
This field that I'm in with Nigel Mapstone from Mole Valley Farmers is about to be planted with lupins, and James Herod is the farmer who's about to plant them. James, have you ever grown lupins before?
No, we haven't. Invested in an inter-row hoe for weed control, so it'd be interesting if, you know, to see if lupins can tolerate the hoe.
Is this a piece of machinery then that does weeding on a grand scale?
It's basically a traditional hoe, but it's got a camera on it and it steers itself down the rows, keeping itself in between the rows of crop and taking out as much weed as it possibly can.
It's a bit of a leap into the unknown.
It is. I mean, instead of seeing yellow fields everywhere, it'd be interesting to see some blue and white fields, yeah.
Well, the moment has come then to hop up on the tractor and give it a go.
Okay.
Nigel, how big do you think the potential is for lupins as a homegrown organic animal feed?
If we can show that you can grow it successfully, the animal feed business in this country would be looking for thousands of tons. And given that we're only expecting a ton to the acre, that's thousands of acres.
Thousands of acres of this stuff, if it's successful. That could potentially be quite a big change in what we see growing in the countryside.
It would be a change to see some blue and white fields instead of all the yellow ones. It all depends on how the first year trials go. It's something which a lot of people are watching at the moment.
Nigel Mapstone there with Sarah Swadling. And more on plants for protein now as we talk vegans. We've been looking at the rise in the number of people following a vegan diet this week. And while it offers obvious challenges for farmers, it does also offer opportunities, as much plant protein from soya to nuts is currently imported. Well, we'll hear from a farmer growing pulses here in the UK in a moment. But as more people become vegan, so more people worry about their health. Should they? How hard is it to eat a healthy, balanced vegan diet? Professor Tom Sanders is Emeritus Professor of Nutrition and Dietetics at King's College London.
The easiest way to look at this is look at the nutrients that provide by milk, meat, eggs and fish, and look at how it can be replaced. And one of the key ones is obviously protein, but that's easily done. You can get that from getting a mixture of cereals and legumes, particularly important. And then you've got calcium, which comes mainly from dairy products, but you can get calcium from plant foods. As there are many people in the world who don't drink milk and get adequate calcium intake. And there's one vitamin that's a real problem. It's vitamin B12. This is made by bacteria, and herbivorous animals get it from the bacteria in their guts, and it's actually present in human faeces, though obviously we don't want to eat human faeces. But there are vegan sources of vitamin B12 that come from bacteria that are used to supplement vegan foods. It really matters on the variety of foods they have in their diet. So it's better if they have whole grain foods, they have a mixture of nuts, legumes, plenty of fruit and vegetables.
So in a way, it's similar to anybody who eats anything, but trying to eat a healthy diet. So steering away from the things we might be attracted to, perhaps, yeah. and eating what's good for us.
Yeah, I mean, one of the pitfalls that vegan diets can have, particularly for young children, is a diet can be very bulky and it's difficult to fill up a child's stomach on vegan food. But that's only if they stuff them full of salad and fruit and vegetables. If they're eating cereals, nuts, pulses, then they get enough food energy in to a small amount of food. So that's one thing you have to watch out for with children.
Are there then any concerns nutritionally about a rise in the number of people becoming vegan?
I don't think there is really a worry about people coming vegan, providing they do it in a sensible way. But if they think they can not take vitamin B12, not look about calcium intake, and just cut out foods and diet, then potentially there is a risk. And occasionally we get reports in the medical literature of kids with severe malnutrition. But in the main, it's quite rare.
Professor Tom Sanders there from King's College London. Well, it can be something of a challenge to buy British if you're vegan. Well, Nick Saltmarsh is the co-founder of Hodmadods, a company which aims to change that. It sources pulses and beans from local farmers for sale largely to whole food markets and independent retailers. I asked him whether an uptake in the vegan diet is benefiting his business.
We started the business just coming up for 5 years ago. So we're seeing a lot of year-on-year growth just as the business grows and matures. But we do also see clearly a growing market in the increase of veganism and other people moving towards diets where they're, if not eliminating, at least reducing the amount of meat in their diet.
One of the criticisms levelled at the vegan diet is that at the moment, a lot particularly of the protein that people eat is imported. How much scope is there for British farmers to grow some of those things?
There's a lot of scope, and that's exactly what prompted us to start our business. We were looking at sustainable diets and how to provide for them more locally, and we identified that farmers in Britain were in fact already growing a lot of vegetable protein, but it was almost all being either exported for human consumption or used as livestock feed in this country. So we could see that field beans or fava beans in particular were being widely grown but not eaten in this country. And the aim of our business at the outset was simply to bring more of these British grown beans as a fantastic source of vegetable protein back into British kitchens.
Can we then in this country grow things like lentils? I mean, I'm assuming we can't grow ever things like almonds and so on.
Well, I'd never say never. things are changing, the climate, of course, but also varieties and production methods. Almonds, though, probably are a bit of a challenge. Lentils are a crop that we're currently doing trials of on a number of farms. We did some fairly small-scale trials last year and had some encouraging results. The lentils grew. We were able to harvest some fairly decent crops from them. So we're scaling up those trials this year to see if we can grow larger volumes viably in this country. But we're hopeful that we can.
We are still talking about very small amounts here, aren't we? Is there the potential to grow this, to perhaps replace some of the business that is lost to farmers because people aren't eating the animals that they have previously produced?
Absolutely. And I mean, something like the lentil trials are very small, but other crops like field beans and peas that are harvested dry, they're already fairly large scale crops. And I think there's a lot of potential to grow those and use them as food in a number of different applications.
Nick Saltmarsh there from Hodmadods. That's it from us. I'm Charlotte Smith. The producer in Bristol is Toby Field.